morning we're going to talk about groups. First part of the lecture, I'm going to give you the relatively rudimentary data that we have on groups and the last part of the lecture, I'm going to give you an example of the foundation as a group. I'm going to use the foundation rather just as a group, which many of you have observed, you know something about, rather than for any other reason, to show you what happens in groups. I could, of course, continue to use governments. In the past, nearly everyone who has been interested in the subject of groups has immediately looked at government. Just why this is, I don't know. Governments aren't that important. The groups in which man is primarily interested are small groups where he is in relatively intimate contact with his fellow man. And it is here that the group works best. The group could be treated from several slants. We could treat a group in terms of its evolution, or we could treat a group in an almost mystical sense. And we would arrive more or less at the same place. So I'm going to treat them for you from both quarters. Now, in evolutionary terms, it has been considered that man developed and evolved to what he is now by varying stages out of a principle known as natural selection. And in this development, which is entirely regulated by survival, he evolved certain definite methods of getting along. Every species evolves certain protective and attacking mechanisms. Now, one of the things that man might be considered to have evolved is the pack, the group. That is the basic unit of group. Man might be considered to have been a hunting pack. Man did not walk alone. And by the way, neither do cats. Man, as a hunting pack, found out that he could achieve more victories more often by being in a group, the combined strength of which would overcome his enemies. He could eat better, and he got along better in general. After all, it is very obvious that a person, a member of the pack, falls by the wayside, the rest of the pack can pick him up and carry him along until he is a little bit better shape. There's an interdependency then. Actually, up to a certain point, man's survival value rises in ratio to the solidity and interdependence of the group. There is an actual survival value then in groups. There are many points here which one could touch upon along the way, such as the fact that one considers the law of tooth and claw as something that is the basic law of nature. I assure you, the law of tooth and claw was the basic law and self-preservation of the individual. If these two were the basic laws, we wouldn't have any people on the face of the earth today. It doesn't happen that these things are basic laws. The group operated, of course, in a very, very close liaison. The next animal in order of intelligence below man happens to be an elephant. The elephant is a very, very smart animal. The elephant also goes in groups. The elephant, by the way, has quite a good-sized set of prefrontal lobes. Apparently quite an analytical animal. And you find these elephants in groups responding in a very remarkable way. Hunters in Africa are very often completely bemused by this situation whereby one elephant is wounded and two elephants will come alongside of him, one on either side, and prop him up and carry him. Great many things have been written and noted about groups of this character, but interdependence is the point of greatest stress as individuals. The people in the past, such as Immanuel Kant, who sought to give innate moral sense to man, and then immediately afterwards, in his next book, stated that man was paid very highly for having this innate moral sense, because actually it was just an outgrowth of his own selfishness. This rather confused individual. I don't like Immanuel Kant, by the way, because he completely stultified philosophy for about 162 years. He was so confoundedly, resoundingly obtuse, abstruse, that nobody could follow along with him. And nobody dared go up against German articles and verbs of that resounding character, and codified the whole thing, the whole field of philosophy, and it rather stayed that way. As a matter of fact, Dianetics is the first major breakthrough of philosophy for 162 years. An interesting fact. You see, philosophy would be basically one of its main points of action is epistemology. And Dianetics is a study of epistemology, which is the study of knowledge. You might not realize that when you're working with Dianetics, that it's actually a study of knowledge, and almost incidentally has to address then the vessel and the computation point of knowledge, which is the human mind. Dianetics came along here as a study of knowledge, and then ran into this area where all of a sudden knowledge, well, if you're going to study knowledge, let's find out how close we can come to knowledge, and we find there the human mind. So let's study the human mind, and then let's go on studying knowledge. Now, what you're studying in terms of processing and so forth is a little bunch up on the track on Dianetics. It's critically important. One shouldn't put that down any the less, but way before you get there and way after you've gotten there, you've got the basic tenets of Dianetics. Dianetics may or may not be great or true or anything like that, but it at least turns around and upsets the tenets which were laid down about 162 years ago. Man has been thinking along these rather stultified and, if I may say so, awfully stupid lines, that the group consisted of a number of individuals who, for their own self-preservation and for no other reason, somehow or other associated with each other. And that any pack was mutually self-supporting just so the individuals in the pack could go on living. The egocentricity of the philosopher that dreamed that one up is second only to the personal aggrandizement thirst of a dictator. The self, and only self existed, is, of course, it doesn't work. You can't look at a philosophy. You can't look at a mental processing and use this principle that only self is important and have the thing work. That is why there's been no mental processing. Dynamic one. I want to point out to you a point on this evolutionary scheme, regardless of the individuality of each member of the group as individuals. I want to point out to you a point on this line, that the more analytical the beast, you might say, the more cooperative his group seems to be. There is a definite justice in saying this. And the accomplishments, so forth, of these groups advance in ratio to the active fact that these things, these individuals are amalgamated into a group. You come up the line and you look at animals, you get to elephants, you get up to man, and now we look at the various stages of man's development, and we find out that his society has come up to a point now and then where he's had a golden age. We find out that his golden ages, very interestingly, are at a certain point where the self and the group and the future all have relatively equal stress. And man is man, you see. There's relatively equal stress along just before these golden ages take place. This balance, more or less, comes into balance, and then other factors, of course, enter in here, food, climate, and the rest of it. But he will proceed, then, to have a golden age of one sort or another, and then, through too much collision with matter, too many wars, and so on, a force will gradually introduce itself into this society, and from being, from running on dynamic one, two, and three, very nicely, all of a sudden, maybe dynamic two will fold off. And he starts into a decline. Still talking about the evolutionary span here of group. Or maybe dynamic three. Of course, if dynamic three were to fold up, group dynamic itself, you would have the same sort of a situation. He would go into a decline. You see, each one of these dynamics becomes blunted by the amount of force into which is entered against it, the amount of suppressor in it, the amount of confusion and entanglement that it gets into with the material universe. And then this point will become blunted, and once it starts to become blunted, its level will fold up all the way down. All right, let's take several societies just offhand and see where this happened. Let's take the Roman society of, of the pagan society there, the old pagans with their gods and so forth, just before the onslaught of Christianity. Christianity came in, and the pagan group, religious group, folded up, and that whole group dived out of sight. All right. Now, let's take another society where the second dynamic, the future, more or less folded up. I know of such a society, by the way. I no reason to go on using classical references. There's a society down in the South Pacific where infanticide became a ruling passion. It was an interesting thing. It developed quite logically and naturally because they were living on a set of islands which had a limited food supply. And naturally, they wanted to keep down their birth rate, and they started to keep down their birth rate with abortion. And into abortion, right? And where that didn't succeed, they murdered the babies after they were born without much selection or anything else. The second dynamic folded up. And I don't think I have to stress the obviousness of the fact this group disappeared. There are very few members of it now. Then there is another group that folded up as a group, and folded up rather consistently as a group. And we're talking now about groups. I don't know how much you know about the early Christian church. There's practically nothing in existence historically about the early Christian church. There are a lot of words written on pieces of paper, but they are not particularly either informative, and they are not particularly Well, they are not completely innocent of having been altered one way or the other down through the years. For instance, the words of Christ probably weren't even written down for about 200 or 300 years. I mean, to any extent, as far as I can find out, I may be wrong about that. But the early Christian church went in as in a sort of a overall effort against the Roman group. They took off against the Romans at a mad rate, and they, Roman courts and so forth, tried to include these people into the laws and tried to exclude them out. It was a very, very bad proposition. Some people had entered into the world who had something. I don't want to step on any toes on this because, it's a completely different thing when you talk about Christ and the philosophy of Buddha, and you talk about God and so forth, and you talk about an aberrated group. Because some of these aberrated groups have attached themselves to some of these causes, it doesn't modify the cause any. I'll show you what happened here. These people attacked a group without setting up in its place any kind of an actual group, because this weird thing happened that they were running on a strange kind of a first dynamic. It was the first dynamic of nest is no good. They had turned around, more or less, and completely retreated away from the idea that their mission was to take over the material universe. They had gone out of balance to that degree, and the next thing you know, everybody started to negate on the first dynamic. And these groups folded up with great rapidity. Actually, the history of the Christianity is a history of upstart groups which peel off and die as other upstart groups come on. It's cyclic. It's tremendously cyclic, which is one fascinating, that there must be something wrong with the general group. Now, the main church that is carried along through this field doesn't operate more or less that way, and they were able to persevere by including in the groups various peoples as they came along. In other words, there's various modifications occurred in this group all the way along the line. They've had a very stormy time of it for about 2,000 years in various places. Have to look at this thing bluntly as a cultural aspect. The main thing is that the initial shock, you might say, that Christianity received at the hands of the Roman nation, as the Roman nation received at the hands of Christianity, formed the basic engram there. To give you some kind of an idea now about the magnitude of an engram in a group, the killing of martyrs and so forth by the Roman nation reacted in such a way, the people who had been drawn to the colors to a large measure had a great deal against the Roman nation. Anyway, lots of them were slaves, people who had been very badly abused. And these people, with that shock of impact against pantheism, against the Roman government, and so on, you see, you're dealing, people have a tendency, because of a misorientation here, to regard the Christians as a people who came in from someplace and attacked the Roman Empire. But this is not true. These were the citizens of the Roman Empire, which were attacking inside. So we're dealing here strictly in groups, within groups, but we're dealing with a group of Romans. And these people attacked the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire had attacked them, and an engram was laid in, and boy, the thought was certainly reactive in that engram. One of the things that happened, the people in the Roman Empire lived rather luxuriously as far as food, clothing, and shelter was concerned in Rome. Rome was a very large capitalism and stayed so practically to the end of her days, most remarkably. You talk about a capitalistic state, believe me, that's one. I'm not talking on the side of being liberal now or capitalistic, either one. But here was this tremendous impact. And to bathe, the Romans bathed. So to revolutionize this group, it was necessary to eschew bathing. The Romans lived in athletic, they practiced athletic skills and so forth. So to revolt against this group, it was necessary to completely negate against any of such skills. One had to deny the body completely. He took no care of the body, used no oils or so forth to preserve the skin. No. So that was knocked out. And the type of government, which after all was a government, I point out, which was good enough to rule the world for a long time, up to the time it really started to. It went into a terrific decline and went into actually a highly reactive state itself. It had killed too many foreign armies, and it had been in itself too often swept over, and myths had entered in there a great deal. They're pretty reactive already. But what was left of the Roman culture was not particularly bad. Good food, baths, games, recreation, and most of the groups which stayed there and were still within the boundaries of the Roman Empire were enormous and prosperous cities, complete with their arts and so on. Well, when the revolution took place against these, anything which had been good in that group was negated against. Complete reactive thought. Romans are painful. Romans eat. We don't eat. Romans are painful. Romans bathe. We don't bathe. Romans have codified laws and courts and government. Therefore, we don't have these codified laws, courts, and government. In other words, there was such a terrific negation. One can measure the violence of what took place about 2,000 years ago in the terms of how it was negated against. It's all very well for somebody today to say that there weren't any Christian martyrs. There must have been, to have caused this much pain in a society whereby everything that was good in that society would just be completely moved aside. And out of this one thing, we have spiritual significance. That was the one thing that survived all this. But we had folded up 3, 2, and 1 in the process. And the Roman Empire dived. It was gone. Good heavens. Any barbarian with a tin sword in his hand could come down over the borders and mop up any town. No armies were put into the field against anything. The internal government fell to pieces. The most weird and horrible governmental practices came into being. The entire coast of North Africa had been a granary. And the agricultural pursuits there were pretty well abandoned. That's because of armies going back and forth over it and the general upset. But right up there to the 5th century, this was still a great granary. Still orchards. It was a beautiful countryside, and it's nothing but a raving desert now. It ceased to be along about the 6th, 7th, 8th centuries into all its convulsion. By 1000, there wasn't actually a civilized body of people in the Western world. At 500, and I think it was about 550 A.D., the total population of Rome consisted of 2 wolves wandering in the forum. It rather gives you an idea of an internal convulsion. It has nothing to do with Christianity. It has nothing to do with Romans. I'm showing you a group which destroyed itself from within with another group and failed to create a true group. And by failing to create a true group to replace what it had abandoned or overthrown, it had to be supported in the most perilous, the most shaky fashion as a group. This had nothing whatsoever to do with the fact that Christianity itself continued to progress. But I point out that Christianity was picking up the sway over new groups which were coming into this area. And Christiani would fire these new groups, and they would come in, and they would fold up. Cycle, one right after the other. Now, it wasn't for a long time until the church itself decided that it had to be a government. It decided, along about the time of Caesar Borgia, that it had to be a good government. It had to be good management. That it had to have a group that would run ably and well. And succeeding this, we have the church, the Catholic Church, walking in and being a government. And when it started to be a government, Europe pulled out of her dark ages. They started to really handle it as a group. And we get the aspect of a king walking barefooted across the Alps to ask the pardon of the actual head of the government of the Western world. Interesting that the world pulled together. The second, the tenets were refined to include the fact that the church had to be a government. I'm giving you very crude examples here, and nothing I say should be construed as criticism of Christian tenets or Roman tenets or anything. It's just an impartial survey of this field. We know there were dark ages. We know that these various things existed, and I've taken a little time in the past to look them over. And particularly, just a short time ago, when I started into an active study of groups, all this data showed up again. It's very important that a group went along just fine, so long as it was running on one, two, and three. Now, we started to knock those out, and any one of them knocked out would cause a decay of the group. And it could be decayed from the moment one of these was knocked out. Now, we look that over from an evolutionary point of view. We find out that man has succeeded in direct ratio to the amount of rationale and rationality, which has been within this group about what the group was doing, how the group existed, what it consisted of. Man progressed, his society progressed, he progressed as an individual. But the idea of the group is very prone shifts until we have again entered a cycle where one of these dynamics is being knocked out. Not much attention is being paid to it. The stress has come off in the past few decades. The stress has come off the individual, the worth of the individual, the value of the individual. Dianetics is a breakthrough along that line, by the way. It talks about the value of the individual. Actually, the individual and the group, the future, mankind, all these things are almost equally important. But because it was introduced into a society where the value of a human being had been discounted somewhat and was on the decline, that particular individuality was punched up. Now, the collective state is the big goal right now. Collective state. That's the thing to have. How long will that last? That is really going to be a steep dive when it dives. Just looking it over, and looking over these tenets, and predicting, one would say, all right, when we knocked out three as a group, and everybody became individuals, why, a society, any society in the past went to pieces. We knocked out two, any society went to pieces. If we knock out one and don't pay much attention to two, don't pay too much attention to it either way, don't negate against the rest. But all of a sudden, say it's all state, it's all group. It's not any part of the individual. Individual doesn't amount to anything. Do you know how bad that's gotten, even in our own society? They are saying that history is the point of advance and so forth of man in history. Have Nothing to do with individuals. It just happened that the group at a particular moment was ripe for something to happen, and a fellow like Alexander the Great happened to be there, and so more or less just the whole situation opportunely resolved around Alexander, and it went on from there. That's the philosophy of history in 1950 in the United States of America, which one century ago was ruggedly individual to a point where if guy would, well, the password, just up to a few years ago, you'd very often hear. They were using this. I'm just as good as you are. Thomas Jefferson said, every man is created with equal rights under the eyes of the law. All right? They narrowed that down. Every man is created equal. Well, they meant this to be a right to their own individuality, and some clever propagandist with more propaganda skill than he had brains came along and said all men are born equal. That means we're a collective state, you see. So, of course, the first dynamic is no good. It's not here. He was watching people rather late in the evening, and I sent them down the track, and they'd gotten into a boil-off, and I didn't have time to run them all the way through a boil-off because I was running two people, so I brought them up to present time. One of them did work up a fever, and the other one got all hollow-eyed, something, looked like he was about 60. He sat there perfectly content, and the doctor said, let's lay off of this now, and let's do something about it in the next couple of days or tomorrow or something. Is there any time to kill these people? And he said, well, it looks to me like pretty bad off. And he took the temperature, showed to me, he took their pulse, showed to me that they were exhausted, they were on the verge of exhaustion and so forth. I took them one after the other. Wasn't trying to demonstrate this fact. Took them back down the track. The boil-offs were over. Ran out the engram at the bottom of the line. Got a good, solid reduction on it. Brought the person up. Ran a pleasure moment or two. Brought them up to present time. Now, when we get psychometry of that character, that will be included in a hardcover book that will be out with these 20 cases. Next spring, it will take to get battled. The foundation, as a group, is a dedicated group to the dissemination of an idea and some techniques which reduce aberration, increase health, and it generally can pick up the tone of a society. That is a sort of a part of its mission. So far, it has run along more or less with that as a statement of what it was trying to do. It was trying to get up this information and hand it out to society. People who weren't immediately interested in validation programs would get out of touch with the validation programs. They wouldn't realize they were still going on. They'd say, well, there couldn't be possibly any research going on because I'm not there doing it. Every man was operating as a whole foundation himself personally. We look over this situation, and we find out there couldn't possibly have been anywhere along this line a group. It was not a group. It didn't have all the rules and laws of groups contained in it, or any proportionate or large part of them. And so naturally, people are being asked to operate as a group, and people look at them and wonder why they aren't a group, why they don't function as a group, why the foundation, you see, that immediately postulates that there's a group, because you have a group name. Group is a foundation, foundation's group, rather. Why this thing didn't go along smoothly, so on. It had been named, but it wasn't a group. Because, actually, it lacked several things which a group lacked. Several things which a group liked on definition lines. What did it have as itself, which was a goal for itself and for the individuals within it? How far did it cover the spectrum, in other words? And it covered it hardly at all. People that were working hard were operating on the third dynamic, maybe for the nation, or the fourth dynamic for mankind. But not so much for the third dynamic for the foundation. They were working for an idea. But that idea was not a group idea. It was a philosophic and a processing idea, you see? So it was the rocky road to Dublin all the way along the line until one sat back and looked it over carefully and analyzed what the devil was going on and what was wrong. Did so immediately after developing these tenets on Dianetics and haven't put all this into effect yet to make the foundations a group. But the first act was Van and Frank came back here from Kansas City and started to amalgamate the thing into the first stage of its evolution into an actual living group. Not a dependency upon a number of individuals, all of whom have the same idea. That isn't a group. Well, they started evolving it in that way. I went back to Elizabeth, put the first evolution of the tenets back into effect. Now, the test of anything is whether or not it works, as far as we're concerned. And back in Elizabeth, we figured out the group situation, so on, put it into certain lines. Just use these tenets and said, this is... the overall group structure, and this and several other factors entering in here, not quite making it a plain experiment, picked up the morale of the Eastern Foundation, its workability, and so forth, came right on up, because it's starting into the first evolution of becoming an actual group. Los Angeles has about a 10-day or 2-week lag on that, give you some kind of an idea how fast these things can happen. There's a 10-day or 2-week lag here. This organization is nowhere near as good a shape as Elizabeth is right at this moment, but is coming up to it. And because it is being evolved into that more rapidly, we'll probably go past Elizabeth. Elizabeth then has to be picked up along the line. Everybody up to a certain point in this organization was my assistant. I mean, everybody in the organization. I mean, this isn't a group. Because I was contributing that, I sit there in the center, it says, unfortunately, and this shouldn't have happened. It says Hubbard Dianetic Research Foundation. That was put on there, perforce, by the board of directors when they first got together to make it possible to hold on to the name so that it wouldn't get dispersed and infiltrated. It had to be laid down by an individual. And then I stepped back off of the thing. I did practically nothing more about it. And then the paper started lambasting Dianetics by lambasting me and calling it a cult and all sorts of things and saying things about me which just simply are not true. And I had to come forward and make a defense of myself. So again, it goes into a Hubbard line. Dianetics doesn't belong to Hubbard. This group doesn't belong to Hubbard. This group is not under Hubbard's authority. That's one of the reasons why... with this, it was an interruption. Hubbard could have, possibly, on an authoritarian line, exclusively, pounded the thing together on a as a controlled extension, which is what a dictatorship is. It's a controlled extension. But that is a very bad way to go about anything. One has to sometimes tend in that direction in order to pick up the immediacy of a situation. But any group which evolved along those lines would be a sick group because it isn't existing as a group. It's existing as a man. And when it begins to exist as a man, something happens to that man. He gets he's feeling badly on Friday, and he has a hangover on Monday, and the whole group reacts just like that. You can tell an authoritarian group, or it's not group, but an authoritarian organization, by this. How much does it reflect the personality, so forth, and the ups and downs and the stress and strain on its head, of its head? How much does it reflect this? You go aboard a naval vessel, and you look around on a naval vessel, and you look it over, and you find out maybe it's a very unhappy ship. Very unhappy. So on. Let's look at the commanding officer. he's an unhappy guy. In other words, you get this authoritarian line where orders are delivered without qualification of any kind whatsoever. The group is not living on ideas. Its own ideas are not being perpetuated amongst it. It's living on orders. And these might be ideas, but they've got mess in them. So they're not ideas. They've mixed up. They've got mess in them. They've got force in them. Because if they are not executed, then the force, material universe force, is going to be entered against these people. Bang. If they don't comply immediately, why, material force is going to be entered against them one way or the other, or they're going to be detached from the business of living, in other words, threatened as to their survival, so forth. I'm not talking now very much about the foundation. I'm using it and demonstrating to you with the foundation just as a pilot project of group. Just as one of my pre-clears will occasionally suffer by having 5 engrams run just once over, just to find out what would happen. So I'm afraid has the foundation suffered to a little bit degree by being a pilot project, but it wasn't even aware of the fact that it was a pilot project. But it is. What is the examination of the tenets of group? Well, it's about time it ceased to be, you see. It shouldn't be in that category. Not the extension of an individual or an extension of an idea. That's unfortunately true because I've been at this longer than anybody else. That doesn't mean that I can do it better than anybody else. Or I can get better ideas than anybody else. Not by a heck of a long line. It certainly doesn't mean that a large number of human beings shouldn't have perfect freedom of action within their own self-imposed, as a group, rules, regulations, and authorities. Because an authority to the group is only a workable authority when the group itself has evolved it and tested it. This is the factor which makes a short-term group look so strange. You see, it hasn't had the time to pick up its own mores and precedent in the line of evolution. Law comes about in this fashion. First, there is a sort of a need for it, and so somebody has a custom. The custom gets originated there, and the custom exists amongst the people, and it gets modified as they use it and carries along. And then, the next thing you know, as a custom, it is codified by somebody. And then it's written down, and then it becomes a law. And incidentally, only laws which have gone through that cycle can be validly imposed. Laws which are arbitrarily laid down suddenly without having gone through that cycle aren't worth the air that it took the legislators to discuss the passing of them. They can't be enforced. For instance, it was not a custom in this society not to drink. It was a slight custom in the society to be secretive about drinking in some places. And it was a custom to be mad about it once in a while, and it was a custom to do a lot of talking about it. So all of a sudden, somebody passed a law that said, prohibition. Nobody can drink. Liquor's not available. That law was not only never enforced, it might as well have never existed. Now, the whole society was subjected to the exact point in the evolution of custom that liquor had progressed to in secret and get mad about it. That was where the custom had progressed to in the group. They all of a sudden fooled it at that point. The custom didn't get a chance to progress, and the law, of course, could not be enforced. If you see, the law doesn't make the ideas of the group. Therefore, an authoritarian organization can't exist as a group. It can't. It's all right for a guy to get ideas and for people to agree or disagree with those ideas or to accept them, perhaps, and amalgamate them. But that isn't enough to make a group out of. In order to make a group, you see, a dictatorship, a nation which has suddenly gone into an authoritarian law level, the survival value of those societies is practically nil. The Roman Empire was dead very shortly after it had its first dictator. The Republic lasted, God knows, what was it, 1,000 years? And then in 2 or 3 centuries, wham, they wind up the whole thing on a dwindling spiral by making an authoritarian group. They bought the people into the group, finally. They bought them in with corn and game. But that group didn't belong to those people. And they acted as such. And it fell flat on its face because of it. You could predict the end of any nation by its first appointment of an authoritarian regime. Also, you can estimate the place on the tone scale of that nation by its suddenly adopting an authoritarian regime. The tone scale on terms of nations is terribly interesting. It's covered to some degree in the book. That's still valid. You see, as it goes down the line here, here are your four scales. As it, up here, it's highly analytical. But this postulates that the group, I'm not talking about the individuals then, I'm talking about the group itself, this postulates that it has a high survival value. Very high survival value, but it also postulates that its status is very fluid. People can join into this or take away from this very easily. They can change this general idea up here. They are also, this group must be in the process of being enormously contributed to by everybody in it, and it must be in the process of contributing to everybody in it. But there is a mean. All of a sudden, if it ceases to let people contribute to it, but contributes to them, like we're doing Europe, it's an authoritarian proposition. It's buying them. It's got to be a two-way concord, all right? After a while, some force gets entered in here because something goes wrong. And somebody enters in some force. And it gets down into this band, and then somebody enters some more force, and the group's ideas are not quite alive, because the second the group itself starts to punish the individuals within it, it goes into a dwindling spiral. The next thing you know, when it gets into about here, by the way, it revolts as a group. When a group starts down the spiral like that, it revolts. It goes completely over and changes polarity. The revolution of the group is exactly the same thing as thought changing polarity, because the group is thought. It can change polarity. The people in it are sort of just sucked into the idea that there's a revolt. It's going down the tone scale. An individual may have come along who just suppressed the devil out of it as one of its leaders. Crush. Or another nation might have come along and gone crush against it. Something must have happened here, but it gets down to this point and gets into this band. It reverses polarity. It's on the way down. The thought itself, the group thought, reverses polarity and becomes reactive thought. The idea turns inside out. About this time, it really has to be picked up by a dictator or something of the sort. And that is the natural evolution of the thing. The person is a dictator. A dictator comes in here about this point, and he says, authoritarianly, the revolution inevitably produces this dictator. Inevitably. People in a group, for instance, are often persuaded to revolt so that they can be free. And they inevitably get an authoritarian regime. Not so much because somebody's intended it this way. Men have better intentions than you would suppose, I'm sure. But because what happens is the person who gets into the position is unable to give them back. He doesn't know, hasn't in the past known some of these little principles here, and he is unable to give them back their own self-determinism, the self-determinism of the group, and send them back up there again. If he could do that, he would be able to bring the tone scale and the survival value of his nation back up on up the line. But that has been a very hard trick. So, because when a group was on its way down, it is already lacking. It's used up quite a bit of its material. A lot of it's messed. The soil is very often quite exhausted. He's got various problems. The group itself, individuals in the group, have been suppressed by it, and the ideas which are brought in are not big enough. So it goes on down here. Ordinarily, it'll fluctuate in here back and forth for quite a long time, and then it'll get down finally into about here. It is on its way out. This is the tone scale of an idea, not the tone scale of the individuals in the idea. It's on its way out. It's dying. The people under it, because people are authoritarianly pressing against this idea, become themselves terribly apathetic. But they don't die. They can wander off and join other groups and so forth. Various things can happen. But they get apathetic, and the tone scale idea comes down to here. Now, suddenly, strange things can happen at this point. This is what we could call the Messiah point. Somebody comes in and he starts talking about a new idea. He's got a new idea. If it is a defeatist idea, the group will perish. If it is a negating idea of let's escape mess and run away, the group will perish. If the Messiah point is reached and all of a sudden an idea is entered into the group to this effect, we must attack. A brand new idea is formed, and we must attack myth. That's what the idea must consist of, must attack myth. If the idea can be shaped out and measures into that, this group, unless its natural resources and so forth, considerably exhausted, even then I think it could pick up. It goes on up the line again and is driven up to the top. When it gets up there, it starts to get spinning, and there's too much mess in it because it has come up to the top, having a lot of mess entered into the turbulence, and it starts on down the line again. Now, a group which is new and so forth starts at, let's say, this point, and is driven up along the line with an attack mess idea. That is to say, well, you've got to attack mess. Actually, the foundation is attacking mess. They haven't recognized it. They are. They're attacking, actually, a second echelon of mess. They're attacking aberration, which is the turbulence between thought and the material universe. As a group, they're attacking that. But it's a nebulous sort of a thing to attack, isn't it? Well, that has to be sort of formed up a little bit better as a recognition. It's not up to me to formulate it, it's up to the foundations itself. Just giving you the foundations of the pilot project of all this. All right, if it is formulated itself as a group then, it will start on up the line. Not because somebody has told it to go on up the line, not because I have told it to go on up the line or anything like that, but the fact that its attack on the problem can bring it on up to the top of the tone scale. But it has to be an attack on the problem as a group. Now, every time in the past that we have started, men have started as a group. They got a group, an idea, the idea being an entity, you understand, the group being the entity, has started on up the line like this. By the time they got to the top, they were still terrifically active as people. And they got up to the top, and they didn't see an immediate goal to attack beyond that point. And in the going, they had gotten so much in turmoil with mess that when they got to the top, the physical activity of the people and the actual perpetuation of the ideas of the group to reach that goal kept from being thoroughly keyed in the engram as a group. The collisions with mess, force, so forth, kept them from being keyed in up to the moment when no goal was possible. Then the concentration, the necessity level of the mind, of the group itself, of the idea, the necessity level lowered, and we started to get key in. There is the golden age. The golden age is the end of a group, not its beginning. Has been in the past. So, suddenly, the group has generally fought in the past for survival in terms of luxury, possessions, material objects, and they finally get so completely bogged down with these material objects, possessions, They get up to a point, nobody's submitting any new ideas because there's nothing new to attack, anybody says. They have plenty of ideas of things to do. Let's go to the games, all that sort of thing. The group immediately starts on the dwindling spiral of heat in engrams. And this idea deteriorates because it has engrams. And if engrams are keyed in, and eventually it'll come down to the bottom of the line again and die. That's the cycle of a group. Tremendous force, pressure, and so forth. But at this point here, the only thing that's the top on the fourth there, the only thing which would save it was for somebody to give it a new goal. If it had a new goal and the idea were big enough and bright enough and people could see suddenly they didn't have everything they needed, that there had to be a new goal. They had to have some new target, something new to think about, some new reason to be. So on, keep them going up. Or if they had, as part of their mores, and as part of their knowledge and part of their culture, ways and means to keep engrams on the group level from forming on the way up, they'd get up here as clears. In other words, if they could pick up their engrams as they went on up the line. I'm talking about engrams in the group, not in the individual group. So it's necessary to examine then for the survival of the group, to find out how groups survive. One has to be able to exactly define the engram of the group, and he has to have a process by which the processing of the group can be done, not as individuals. Fortunately, the group borders over into the individual to such an extent that group engrams are quite normally little groups inside the big group. They'll be sort of, they'll act as engrams and points of contagion. Now, one has to clear those. One only clears all of this really by letting in some light into the idea and clarifying the thought line. Any group starts up, is immediately, has three strikes on it, you might say, by being thoroughly connected to all the engrams of the past. Therefore, this group would have to be pretty learned about what has been going on to really keep up what has been going on. Knowledge, knowledge, lots of knowledge, lots of information, no secrets, no communication interruptions, nothing hidden. And if it went on along that level, it would succeed, providing it had a specific goal. The foundation went along fine, still using this as an illustration here, they went along fine up until the moment when they reached Plan B in the book. They had not had anything assigned as a foundation beyond their own creation. There was no goal assigned beyond their existence. Now, what were they to do? Actually, they had some things to do. One of them was to validate Dianetics. A lot of people are working on that. But not everybody. So that's one of the palpitating heartbeats that keeps the group going, is this validation project. That'll go on for a long time. That's heartbeat. That isn't the central goal, then, is it? It doesn't occupy enough. It's got enough space. This is how we are going about the business of surviving, not what are we surviving toward? What is our goal? What are we going to reach? What is the end product of all this work and formation that we're doing here? For the individual group, where does it end? What is it supposed to do? What does this group offer the individuals who are in it? What do the individuals in this group offer to it? And what is the goal? Yes, what is the goal? Now, the second that goal is defined thoroughly, adequately, and it is an agreed-upon thing amongst the people who are members of this group, which is an entity, then the idea, the entity, becomes that much bigger as a group. So the foundation at that moment would become, in actuality, a group. Its government would be government by its own election, and actually no group could possibly exist long as a self-determined organism which wasn't able to exercise the power of choice. a good, solid power of choice on what was going on. Actually, these groups do exercise a power of choice even when somebody is appointed to take care of them, because somebody is appointed to take care of the group and the group gets rusty. Then that person can no longer take care of that group, you see, in interest of efficiency. But this requires that the group have a bigger thought above it to keep it fixed up. So it had better be stable in itself. That doesn't mean that it would be stable in itself. So there has to be some power of choice within this group. Then there is a tremendous confusion in any group where any point from which ideas are emanating is suddenly confused as the point of authority for action and being. You could confuse that enormously. In other words, that authoritarian action should be expected from the source of an idea. Groups evolve ideas. This group is always evolving ideas. I stand with the group. I pick up ideas, formulate them, and so forth, work with it, so on. I'm working on various ideas of processing. People immediately turn around to me because I work with ideas. I'm just showing you how an authoritarian regime would go, using it as an illustration. The point would be, he must certainly see the administration of this group because he is a source of the ideas of this group. He therefore must be the source of authority for this group. And so it is. I mean, it could work that way very easily. If I want to favor the group cooperating with me, individuals in the group cooperating with me, but living with the same group, if I want a favor done, and so forth, the group will do the favor. But it would be far better to have it on the line of a favor rather than to have it on the line of an order. Because the second that this idea starts to become authoritarian on the individual, then these people are not contributing to that group, nor because they aren't the substance of that group. The body of the group, then, is laid away a little bit. So a man who is furnishing ideas to the group would be put in a very serious position. A fellow by the name of Lenin got poisoned for it. He had an interesting aspect there. He's furnishing all kinds of ideas. He picked up Karl Marx's work, and he's furnishing all kinds of ideas. And everybody kept pushing him forward as administrative, executive. They were in a point of turmoil and confusion. There was not much time. And the only way he could regulate the group, he thought, was by a rather an elective line. The university occasionally furnishes the future of its individuals. If only occasionally. It's assisting an individual as a man-to-man sort of an effort to go out and work with that group. See, it's just giving them a stick. Furthermore, the university does not offer within it such units as the family, and so on. It doesn't have the center units necessary, and neither do the Elks Club. Although families belong to the Elks Club. You notice one of these clubs will get started, these little light clubs, nothing against the Elks, but a little light social club will get started and start calling itself a group, and it tries to behave like one. It wonders why people don't dash in suddenly and send out its full mailing list, and people will starve and they'll sweat along trying to get this thing to work as a group, and the essentials are missing out of it as a group, so they have an awful time. It's got to have all these essentials as a group, otherwise it don't exist, but it is not necessary for the group to own a single piece of land. It can have an occupancy just exactly the same as the people who stand on. I mean, it's as much land as the people themselves have, but the group itself doesn't own that. Another little mistake that government makes. All that a group can do is protect the land the individual owns. If it protects the land the individual owns, then it will continue to hold sway over the individuals. It offers protection. All right, we look over these basic tenets. I'm not handing out solutions because this lecture is not addressed to the foundation at all. I'm showing you an analogy of this whole situation. We look over a national government now. Just as we've looked over the foundation, we find out what it offers and what it doesn't offer. We find the national government right now is taking far more in contribution than it is giving back in service. the income tax and so forth. For instance, it is taking contribution. It's taking contribution on the pretext, or the fraud, if you want to call it that, that is going to protect the personal property of the individual we're dedicated to. It's going to also protect the persons of the individuals, and 36.6% of the tax dollar is allegedly dedicated to protecting the person and the property of these individuals from incursion by other elements, groups, individuals. 36.6%. The only trouble is the weapon of today cannot be so protected. So the moment the atom bomb was delivered onto the national states to be able to fulfill their full functions as groups, and the individuals more or less sense this to some degree. They're rather lackadaisical right now about the war, infantry, and so forth. They're waiting for the big punch. There's going to be a bigger one. And it was talked about in the newspaper last night. MacArthur evidently has, according to Truman, which was amended later by the White House, which has obviously confirmed the fact that Truman was probably right, MacArthur has evidently the right to heave one of these atom bombs into Manchuria. I've been to Manchuria. I don't know what the hell he's bombed. But they've got the right to do it. Well, people are kind of waiting for the big punch. We've got this tremendous budget, in other words, which is supposed to take care of us from the incursion of other nations. Why, all of a sudden, do we find civil defense motions? Civil defense. They're getting very interested in civil defense. The American Red Cross, as New York City, as much as a year ago, And all of a sudden, I got completely roped off in the traffic and so forth. The American Red Cross and the Boy Scouts and several doctors and so forth were practicing evacuation of an atom-bombed area. They had a little slip of paper from the government of the city of New York which said they had permission to do this. One small organization outside of Philadelphia, which can spot maybe if they went into this a little bit, sort of, it wasn't much being done where, that they thought maybe they could get, you know, somebody. So they issued a little notice in the paper and said they were holding a meeting to discuss civil defense upon this. And the place was crammed. A place which was to accommodate a couple of hundred people received a couple of thousand. Just like that, they want to discuss civil defense. People very serious about the whole thing. Very practical, too. The government has gone under the thing that we are very tender-minded, for instance. We must be protected from these shocking horrors and so forth. But nobody knows better than themselves. There is no protection against this thing to amount to anything. They're in a complete state of apathy about it. Here in Los Angeles, all of a sudden we find out that the city government of Los Angeles had borrowed under Parks and Memorials Commission, something or other, a guy part-time and a couple of secretaries, and this was the atom bomb civil defense program. And the newspaper reporters found out about this. They've been having a little bit of a holiday with this thing. Aha. What the hell is this? You mean to say that the groups, the officially designated groups to which we are dedicated and so forth, are suddenly not only not being, not protecting property and so on, but are actually in a state of apathy about their ability to do so. Like, the city government of Los Angeles can't do very much about it yet, so. But the citizens aren't. The citizens aren't. They will go around about this and the horrors of the atom bomb, what you're supposed to do, and what you're supposed to do about this and about that, and Rayburn poisoning and the rest of that stuff. People study. One of the best sellers on this market right now is What to Do in Case an Atom Bomb Drops. Little pocketbook edition. I'm afraid that the government hasn't an element in it which can be supported by the people at this time. There must be something missing. Here we have an elective type of government, and we would certainly, if there was a solution being offered by the government, we would certainly be putting it into effect term in society. So we're not putting that into effect, so the idea of it, somebody is missing. The idea is decaying, but the people aren't. The people themselves are evidently trying to work under a new cooperative idea. And you get the germs, you get the first germs of its evolution in the fact that you get public meetings without government sponsorship. You get public interest in a function, the protection of the person and the property against foreign invasion. That is the first germ of a new idea. Anybody could come along and start pushing this idea. It's right there waiting to be pushed. It's an interesting thing. It'll probably take, ordinary course of human affairs, it would evolve very easily into a new kind of a government. If left alone, if it weren't hit from abroad, if missiles didn't hit it, it could evolve into a new idea. It probably something there could be taken care of. It'll change. We're in a period of change, but it's not going to get a chance. The second that it suffers, I'm afraid, an onslaught from foreign source, an atom bombing, something like that. Doesn't matter. I mean, not interested now in the horror tale whether you kill off half of the people all at once. And I know Japan's very much of a going concern. But the point is that there's no defense against it particularly. So it's going to catalyze. This is going to be a shock. And it is going to be an engram which is going to be laid against the federal government, which will practically nullify it. There will be something else. One of the main reasons why is the center of the federal government probably will cease to exist. Interesting. What right ground this is for a revolutionary. Because the government, the people at that time and the whole group idea at that time will be down here into the one band. Somebody could hit this country on an authoritarian line and actually do remarkable things on this authoritarian line. Yes, and it probably will happen. Probably some general of forces will find himself in possession of an untouched army corps in the continental limits of the United States if these atom bombs ever hit. I'm just not writing science fiction. I'm just showing you what the score is with regard to something like this. The government goes out. But the second that first bomb hits, the trust and faith of the people in the government goes, because they know there are no radar screens out there to intercept these things. So you can't affect that. So the thing, somebody is going to come along on some specious or spurious grounds of some character, but just because there's named this organization, will insist that what we need at this time is not a self-determined state. In view of the great emergency of the situation, and in view of the fact that he has the Fifth Army Corps or something like that, if he's back, some joker with a few stars glittering will undoubtedly move in. There goes the first spark on this group. Now, a new group idea, not having been postulated at that moment, will be absolutely vital to this operation. Unless it exists, the survival value of the group is very bad. It will go down into apathy. It will skid down from the dictatorship instead of going up, because a dictator cannot possibly introduce back into the society authority which he took away from it so suddenly and quickly, and suddenly relax and withdraw unless he has taken away also the aberrations which made it necessary for the setup to take place. You understand that? Claudius the First, for instance, tried very hard to give the Roman Empire back to the Senate and back to the people. He worked on it hard. And he was not able to do so. Once he'd taken this fight, realized that he was dealing with philosophic principle, a tone scale. The people were here, and they were fluctuating around here, and nobody put them up to here yet. And they certainly weren't en route up to here. They didn't have any future goal. After all, the Roman Empire had conquered the world. Where else did they have to go? Alexander had gone out and conquered the world. Where else did he have to go? All they could do as a group was to fall back. They'd reached their top scale, and they were on their way down. All right. This country isn't a question of whether or not this country would get atom-bombed if one started to figure this out very closely. It isn't a question of whether it would get atom-bombed or not. The odds are getting better and better in favor of that, right straight along the line. Second, we start about talking about throwing atom bombs, and we were the first ones to talk about it again. We're just inviting them. So, I'm afraid the future and so forth could be better thought about in terms of having a new set of goals ripe and ready. Wouldn't be up to me to outline any goals, or even to you as an individual to outline any goals. But it might help if somebody made suggestions with regard to what these goals might be. If those goals are there, and if they don't include just plain self-preservation, which was never the first law of nature, if it isn't this self-preservation thing which says, because we've been slapped, we got to fight back, we got to kill them, we got to kill them, we got to kill them, that's sensible, that is. That group could only have this as a momentary resurgence. That's your relapse into apathy at the end of the war. People don't realize how much of a borderline this whole idea has been going through since World War I. The psychosis of war, relapse. The goals get more and more basic because more and more messed thought and idea. The goals get more and more basic. The general tone starts coming down. So the only country has a goal is when it is fighting. Actually, the societies of men have been insane for a long, long while. Measure them on the tone scale, because they are going from line two here down to line zero and back up to line two, and there's never been one yet which really 100% went up to a four. That's fluctuation, and it's a very low order of fluctuation. What the society needs at the present time more than anything else is some kind of an idea of what the whole society, and this isn't including Dianetics at all, I mean, to talk about it, the whole society should have some sort of a goal. What are they really going to do? What's the country going to do as a whole? We had a big goal as long as we were moving west. But then we hit the Pacific Ocean. Oh, what do we do now? Well, let's develop everything. Well, we got everything pretty well developed. Well, now what do? Well, let's fight. This kind of thinking isn't very good thinking in the periphery of arena of the world. So, at the moment, General Zachariah Q. Swivelchairbottom says, in view of the existing emergency, the death of the President of the United States, the Vice President, all cabinet members except three, whom we have just executed, the government of the United States is here under and hereafter to be conducted in the forms of martial law until the civil populace can be rescued. And people will go on being rescued, being dragged up here and there, and then they will say, you know, I don't think that this Zachariah Q. Swivel Chair Bottom is a good guy. He's subordinate. He will say, who said that? And, a fellow by the name of Smith and a guy by the name of Jones over there. And what town are they from? Was there any more dissension over in that town? What's the name of the town? Jenkins Center. Any more dissension in that town? Well, we don't know. Somebody over there said this morning he didn't think that last communique of yours was very good. They said, what? Because this guy, by that time, he's really been slugged around. In addition, administration is a tough job. I don't care which Zachariah Q. Swivel Chair Bottom it is. Administration is that, and it makes men nervous. And all of a sudden, he is faced with this, faced with that, emergencies. He's found out that one man can run things in a very, very short space of time. He can get an awful lot accomplished because communications lines, they all come into him, and he has dispatch riders running out, and everything all goes across his desk. But then he has to back off of that spot. Management, by the way, is the process of backing off consecutive spots. So he backs off of that desk, but then there's high priority comes in here and he's got to form another desk, but things, that gets too tough, so he steps back here, and the first thing you know, every piece of information he gets comes from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, yeah? That's fine. Only these guys are trying to hold their jobs, and they've got relatives, and they have their own pet vendettas, and there was one of these guys, number 5, in this particular case. It seems like he was through Pumpkin Center once, or Jenkins Center, and doggone gas station attendant spilled some grease on his pants when he was young. He doesn't quite remember exactly what happened, but he knows this town, Jenkins Center, isn't so hot, and here he hears of subversive activity. That very word, subversive, that there's something coming up from under. To do what? Of course, Zachariah has no other choice but to say, well, let's see, the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th Military Police Division, with their armored tanks, they're just too fully occupied. You'll just have to do something about Jenkins Center. We're not quite sure what you're supposed to do about Jenkins Center. So, it's obviously a foment of rebellion, something like that. So somebody goes over and they say, what's the matter with you people? It's talking wrong. You're talking in terms of the fact the communiques aren't any good and so forth. You know, those are the best written communiques been issued. Now, you know that. And these guys say, no, we don't know it. The literary prose is terrible. It's awful. And quite in addition to that, it says that all city reservoirs shall be 12 feet deep, and we've got one 9 feet deep, but the thing sets up all right for our town, but you say they all got to be 12 feet deep because there might be water shortages. I don't know what you guys are talking about around here. There's no water shortage around here. Haven't you heard? This is Jenkins Center, Northern Oregon. No water shortage up here. I have to take care of those deserts down there in the south. Well, what are you sending us this order for? Well, it's all right. Overall administration, these things just got to happen, that's all. Well, you go out and drain that reservoir down to the proper point where it's supposed to be drained down to, or we'll blast it up, and so on. And by the way, you're fired. It starts small. But the next thing you know, I like the idea of being fired. The next thing you know, somebody else, he kind of gets sour on this thing. He gets a communique that says, here and after, at 4 o'clock, all shoes shall be polished by somebody named Betty. And there isn't a girl named Betty in the whole town. just about like that, because administration is a tough racket. You try to hand this stuff out. Until you're in an administrative post, people don't really realize how confused it can get. A nation that's colored by self-interest, it's colored by bad things, this, you take information from various sources, and finally you hire an intelligence corps that gives you more information, only their reports and so forth make more administration, and then you get some administrators to administer the intelligence corps so they can administrate the administrators, and the next thing you know, it's so complex, everybody's passing around paper clips and going slowly nuts. So this sort of thing cannot be run efficiently on an authoritarian basis beyond the point where easy communication is possible amongst all members of the group. See, easy communication makes for the development of the ideas, the heartbeat on which they're working to accomplish their highest goals. Communication makes it possible for them, for the idea itself, to live and survive. And we find out that ease of communication necessarily makes for high affinity level. Affinity is just another word for little theta. All right. When we find this is the case, then a group quickly flops over its natural dimensions unless it is so thoroughly amalgamated throughout the society by easy communication channels that can actually set as many groups more or less doing the same thing. Then, if they're still in easy communication with each other, the agreement can still exist. But not on an authoritarian level for all of these groups exist. There is a natural group size. I don't know what it would be, but there is a natural group size. It is that group size in which ease of communication currently is very possible. Now, that keeps the affinity of the group up. Their agreement goes along beautifully. In other words, the big idea runs. An authoritarian line, every time a forceful order goes down, chips off a little piece of affinity. which cuts off a little more communication, which knocks down a little more reality. And they go into this dizzy, dwindling spiral. And the dizzy, dwindling spiral, by the way, somebody asked me the other day, I didn't realize, people didn't know quite what it was. A dwindling spiral is simply this, triangle, communication, reality. And we break some of this affinity, and a little bit of the reality goes down, and then communication goes down, which makes it impossible to get some affinity as high as before. So a little bit more gets knocked off this, and then this goes down, and then communication, and then a little bit more dwindles off of that, and all of a sudden, that one goes down, and it's got a marching line of consecutive triangles here, actually. And there is your dwindling spiral in progress until it hits the bottom of death, which is no affinity, no communication, and no reality. And any group which embarks upon an authoritarian line where administrative not drawn from the, not compared to the general idea of the, which the group is operating, and where everything is enforced by orders given without the consultation with the group itself, and where the administrator does not exist because the group wants him and is not practicing as a servant of that group, he is a point of service to the group. When those things don't exist, you get your authoritarian type of regime and enter the dwindling spiral. And when that dwindling spiral gets entered, boom. Now, there are moments of emergency where, and this, by the way, is involution of groups. There's a moment of emergency where an individual will suddenly pick up and say, this is the thing to do. He is followed because it's a good idea, not because he is this guy. He is as good as the idea. And he should be followed as far as the idea and no further. So, in other words, when we talk of putting a group together, we see how one is going to be taken apart. Speak of an atom-bombed nation. Central government, which has been operating more and more on a little more and more authoritarian line all the time, which is contributing, trying to put up the semblance of contributing too much to certain members of the populace, and which is taking too much from other members of the populace, which doesn't have a parity of line from every individual in it, a parity of interchange for all the individuals in it, is creating classes and is creating various things, authoritarian line. All of a sudden, bing, that gets hit suddenly and savagely by something which it cannot prevent. At the moment when that happens, the admission is right there that the government was not doing that. That will be a moment of rage and revolution against the government, even though it never shot. Even though the government is gone and now can't be revolted again, people are going to get sore. They're going to be mad. They might be kept from revolting if their attention can be suddenly something far away, you might say. But that attention, they will focus their attention on something far away. This fellow says, Russia did that to us. But the solution to all this is to go to fight Russia immediately. Let's go to war with Russia. And he centers all of this rage, which is suddenly accumulated, and he channels it and sets up an artificial short-term goal. And these short-term goals, of course, start into the dwindling spiral. You've got to have long-term goals to succeed. And I think to get a long-term goal, that's why very few governments have evolved them. Now, you go out along the line of your dwindling spiral, goes on down the line. It coasts into nothing. But each time, there will be a revolution by the few effectives within it. But it can only be catalyzed by them. The group itself must be catalyzed into a point where it carries itself, where it governs itself, which with its own consent, evolves itself, and if it's to go up the line, it has to be able to keep itself, as a group, process of the thing in the past. And if it does that, man might possibly be able to get up to a tone four and get a continuum. Until that time, he will be unable to do so. I have certainly talked your ear off in this last lecture. I want to thank you very much for your patience.